"But you have not slept yet, old man," he said aloud. "It is half a day and a night, and now another day, and you have not slept. You must devise a way so that you sleep a little if he is quiet and steady. If you do not sleep, you might become unclear in the head." "I'm clear enough in the head," he thought. "Too clear. I am as clear as the stars that are my brothers. Still, I must sleep. They sleep, and the moon and the sun sleep, and even the ocean sleeps sometimes on certain days when there is no current and a flat calm. But remember to sleep," he thought. "Make yourself do it, and devise some simple and sure way about the lines. Now go back and prepare the dolphin. It is too dangerous to rig the oars as a drag if you must sleep." "I could go without sleeping," he told himself, "but it would be too dangerous." He started to work his way back to the stern on his hands and knees, being careful not to jerk against the fish. "He may be half asleep himself," he thought, "but I do not want him to rest. He must pull until he dies." Back in the stern, he turned, so that his left hand held the strain of the line across his shoulders, and drew his knife from its sheath with his right hand. The stars were bright now, and he saw the dolphin clearly, and he pushed the blade of his knife into his head and drew him out from under the stern. He put one of his feet on the fish and slid him quickly from the vent up to the tip of his lower jaw. Then he put his knife down and gutted him with his right hand, scooping him clean and pulling the gills clear. He felt the maw heavy and slippery in his hands, and he slid it open. There were two flying fish inside. They were fresh and hard, and he laid them side by side and dropped the guts and the gills over the stern. They sank, leaving a trail of phosphorescence in the water. The dolphin was cold and a leprous gray-white now in the starlight, and the old man skinned one side of him while he held his right foot on the fish's head. Then he turned him over and skinned the other side, and cut each side off from the head down to the tail. He slid the carcass overboard and looked to see if there was any swirl in the water. But there was only the light of its slow descent. He turned then and placed the two flying fish inside the two fillets of fish, and putting his knife back in its sheath, he worked his way slowly back to the bow. His back was bent with the weight of the line across it, and he carried the fish in his right hand. Back in the bow, he laid the two fillets of fish out on the wood with the flying fish beside them. After that, he settled the line across his shoulders in a new place and held it again with his left hand resting on the gunwale. Then he leaned over the side and washed the flying fish in the water, noting the speed of the water against his hand. His hand was phosphorescent from skinning the fish, and he watched the flow of the water against it. The flow was less strong, and as he rubbed the side of his hand against the planking of the skiff, particles of phosphorus floated off and drifted slowly astern.